Hello, everybody. I'm Clay Breese, and this is The Watchman. We always pay attention to the verbs because they walk us through the real intent of our lawmakers. Our commitment is for the objective truth. The Watchman calls out whenever we see those that live in the fifth dimension attempt to put feelings and emotions in front of facts and truth. We get to the place here on The Watchman where everyone sees the objective truth. We expound on the underreported facts. And today we're going to be getting back to this, to The Watchman here with Annette Baker, an environmental science expert and homeschool teacher. She's also a regional chairwoman in the Berks GOP. Welcome back to The Watchman, Annette.
Hi, Clay. Thanks for having me back.
Well, thanks so much. We're going to pick a little bit up on the polls that came out, and I want to tie this into some stuff that we're seeing with the media right now, which is unbelievable. Look, first off, I see the media is putting out Quinnipiac polls. Now, Quinnipiac, I don't think ever got a poll right. I mean, somebody, if any of our listeners knows any of this, just send us a note here on AM Radio 1180WFYL.com. Shoot us an email. Let us know what poll that Quinnipiac actually got right. Because I don't think they've ever gotten a poll right, yet we continue to use these people. I know the presidential polls, they were horrible in. I didn't see anything they got right. I just didn't. And they're being pushed across the fake news screens. And I guess even Fox put it out there. But we're seeing other polls, like Fox polls and things. They're just not right. And again, they were wrong. They were wrong in the 2016 election. And now they're touting these as expert polls. And they're making stories about them. So help me understand. Again, what have they gotten right? And how would anyone care about polls that were wrong? And why do they care about them? Why does the fake news promote what Real Clear Politics polls are? Now, just for our listeners, Real Clear Politics is an average of good polls and bad polls. Again, yes, I want our listeners to understand what I just said because the words came out of my mouth and I know people are going, huh? Okay. Real Clear Politics is an average of good polls and bad polls. So now we have to be asking ourselves, why do we care about bad polls at all? And why do we care about an average that includes bad polls? Well, maybe they don't want to admit that they're bad polls. I'm calling them bad polls because they don't get anything right. OK, so maybe some other people might want not to call them bad polls. To me, the polling outfit that got the most right that I saw in the presidential campaign was RasmussenReports.com. That's RasmussenReports.com. That's R-A-S-M-U-E-U-S-S-E-N. That's R-A-S-M-U-S-S-E-N. RasmussenReports.com. They are the best polling outfit that I've seen. I've been watching them since 2000, 2002, somewhere in the early aught years. And again, they've been consistently tracking Trump between 48 to 52% favorable approval ratings, consistently. And all the other polls, we see him down. I think Quinnipiac had him down to 42%, 41%. They're baloney. But let me make another point here. Because I wanted to go back up. I wanted to look at some of the polls from a year and a half prior to each of these elections. You know, we had all these past presidential elections. So I went back and I looked at some of the polls they had prior to these elections. And again, you know, because you just don't feel right with what you're seeing. Okay. And, you know, I don't really remember them. I just wanted to go back and look at them because I wanted to see what I would learn from it. I mean, nobody really knows. So anyway, but I went back, I looked at February 1995, NBC News. The election for 1996, Bob Dole, they had Bob Dole defeating Bill Clinton by 6 points. I will tell you, I was very excited when I saw that poll. And yes, we all remember Bob Dole got beat. Okay. We all remember Bob Dole got beat. He was defeating Bill Clinton by 6 points. Okay. 51 to 45, I think it was. April 1987. Yes, they had Gary Hart. Remember Gary Hart, okay? We had Gary Hart. He was going to beat George W. Bush by 8 points. Well, we all know what happened to Gary Hart. And then, of course, Michael Dukakis got in there, and he got pummeled. The election of 88 was, Bush did win. So let's go back to 1983. Okay, now that's before, you know, that's like a year and a half before the election from 1984 when Ronald Reagan won in a 49-state landslide. And I'm going to tell our listeners a little secret. I did vote for Walter Mondale in 1984. Confession is good for the soul, so I wanted everyone to know that. I was on the losing end of this landslide. But I was a liberal back in 1984 when I got out of college. That's where it was. Younger, in my younger days. But anyway, we all know what happened. Okay, now they had Mondale, again, defeating Reagan 47 to 41%. So Mondale was actually defeating Reagan back then, which I thought was interesting. And in March of 1979, okay, they had Ronald Reagan. We know what happened. I mean, We first off, we know Reagan won, you know, in 84. But we also had Jimmy Carter defeating Reagan by 14 points in March of 1979. Jimmy Carter was being shown as defeating Ronald Reagan by 14 points. And we know what happened there. Reagan beat him. So this is like what we're seeing out here today. And again, these are all presidential. I went all the way back, folks. I mean, you go all the way back to where I can see this. And you see this. And again, you know, we're seeing that there's more examples of this. And when you go back, you can just take a look at it for yourself. But it's the same people, the same polling data. You know, moments ago, I mean, you know, again, all kinds of previous years, you go back, the eventual winners were all predicted to lose in landslides. That's what I'm saying, folks. So the losers are always predicted as winners. That's what I got out of this. Annette, I don't, you know, what are your thoughts on some of what I just discussed with the losers all being projected as winners a year and a half before the election starts?
Well, it's interesting. I was just thinking about and managed to find the information as you were talking that Walter Mondale was polling very closely to Ronald Reagan in 1984. And if I remember correctly, didn't Ronald Reagan win, like, I don't know, almost every state?
49 states. He won 49 states.
Yeah, I was thinking that, you know, out of the 67 we have, according to President Obama, but...
Obama said 57 states. No, it's 50 states. Yes. No, I didn't. But Mondale.
Mondale was polling closely to Reagan. Like,
but he was actually ahead of him. But he was ahead of him 15 months before the election. They showed him beating Reagan. And I thought what's really funny on this, I mean, he didn't just get beat. He was hammered. He lost every state. And I think what's interesting on that, when you look back, I remember the 84 convention. As I said, I was a liberal back then. You know, I thought differently, younger. I was a couple of years old, you know, in my early 20s. Okay. And, you know, you just think differently. And I remember watching him, though, in his cardigan sweater in San Francisco at the convention going, as he said, we need to freeze nuclear weapons. We need to freeze. And the way he said the word freeze, I swear, I remember thinking, ouch, that is weak. Anyway, I remember seeing the light then, and but he got hammered. And I think that what's encouraging to me is that we know the truth here, because all of these polls showed the losers ahead. All of them. Why is that? And you know, there might be some, you know, some psychological reasons for that, I guess, if you had to look at the reasons. I don't know. I'm not trying to overanalyze it. I just want to look at the basic facts that the losers were predicted as the winners. And here we have Donald Trump, you know, last week, he announces his candidacy in front of 20 plus thousand inside of a stadium. And of course, tens of thousands outside screaming in front of the big screens. And I mean, the energy was unbelievable. And every one of those Democrat candidates, I mean, we had Swalwell. He actually did a rally. I call it a rally. I'm going to tell you folks why I say that with quotes. But he did a rally at Fairfax in front of the NRA headquarters. And there was 18 people there. A rally with 18 people, okay? This is the kind of stuff. I mean, these people are drawing flies. I mean, they can't draw anybody to their events. They're empty seats. The Democrats have bad ideas, and people know it, so they don't want to come to the events. Okay. And I mean, that's what you're seeing. So they're all marveling. They're all marveling at how Trump is out there just completely in front of this. I mean, he is a beast on the campaign trail. He really is. He's just unbelievable. And I say that in the term of a good thing. It's just, he's just in a football term. You know, you call a guy that makes all the tackles and breaks through all the blocks, the defensive linebacker that does all that, you call him a beast and a player. Donald Trump is that type. I mean, he's just an outstanding campaigner to the point where he just overwhelms his opposition. I've never seen anything like this in my life. I would dare to say nobody has. This is why we're living in history, which I think is really neat. And Annette, what are your thoughts on this? And why do you think that the media is promoting these lousy polls? And what do you think that the people are actually seeing? I mean, what do you see when you're working out at the community events and talking to people in the community? What do you see about what they think about these polls? Do you think they think they're phony or what? What do you think they see?
Well, they definitely don't believe it. And, you know, it was interesting because I remember driving through rural parts of Pennsylvania that I don't normally drive through right before the 2016 elections. And there were Trump signs everywhere. I mean, there was enthusiasm that I didn't even know was there. And it's kind of hard, you know, living in Berks County, we see a lot of the negativity toward Republican candidates and the skewed polling and all that kind of stuff. So it's very easy to buy into that a little bit. And it's interesting because I think that's part of the idea is if you can demoralize people and make them think that, well, my guy's not going to win, I shouldn't really get out there because, you know, it's a losing battle, I'll just stay home. And I think that's part of the idea is, you know, and it's a tactic that, you know, people use to try to keep voter turnout suppressed. That's one of the reasons that they stopped announcing information on TV until after the polls began to close across the country, because they realized that, you know, it was wrong for the media to try to influence elections. And I wish they would understand that these polls, and I've been looking at the Quinnipiac poll, and one of the interesting things I pulled out of that, and I heard someone talking about it before, and it might have been Rush Limbaugh, but I'm not sure. They were mentioning that there is actually an oversampling of Democrat voters in a lot of these polls. And in the Quinnipiac poll, they actually had 1,214 voters that they surveyed to ask all of these questions about, do you approve, you know, which candidate do you like? Because the big splash with Quinnipiac was of the top tier candidates that are at this point able to make it to the debates, every single one of them would beat Trump, right? That was the big yeah. news story. The interesting thing is they had 503 Democrats or Democrat leaning respondents that they identified, but they didn't break down the rest. They didn't, as far as I could tell, they did not break down how many Republicans or Republican leaning, how many independents and independent, you know, those that are not affiliated with any particular party. Those numbers weren't broken down. So you have 711 other people that were surveyed with a margin of error of 5%. Well, 5% when you're talking about, you know, 41 to 48, you know, you're very, very close there. And if you have an oversampling, say they only had 200 Republicans or 250 Republicans, but the rest were independents, depending on where they live, their geographic location, that makes a difference in a lot of cases, the way that they're going to lean, either Democrat or Republican. So you can see where the numbers can get really skewed very quickly.
That's right.
And with the idea of, you know, you can, somebody had told me this, they said, you can make numbers lie.
Wow.
And, you know, just by doing a lot of statistical things and manipulating things.
Well,
polling samples are a huge way. If you only poll from one certain area, and I was looking at an overview map of where, of the actual precincts and counties that President Trump won. And when you begin to drill down, there are places that want that Hillary Clinton won by 2 votes or 3 votes for a particular area. And it was fascinating to take a look at that and realize that 2 or 3 votes turn it from blue to red. Now, it would be weak Republican, but it would still be a red voting place. And that's particularly in Berks County. There were a number of places like that where 2 or 3 votes decided whether it was blue or red. And when, if you concentrate your sample in certain areas, you can definitely skew your results easily.
Who's the conductor of all this? You see, this is what I want to get to. The fake news acts like an enemy of the people, because what they're doing is, okay, they're conducting, they're orchestrating all of this. They're the ones that are paying Quinnipiac. They're the ones that want to see these polls. Okay. Now, what does the fake news do? How do they do that? Well, the way the fake news achieves their deception is when they want to promote a narrative, they glamorize it, they elevate it, they minimize the problems, and they actually perform damage control when things get revealed. That's what you see with the fake news when they're trying to achieve deception, if you will, and they're trying to promote something, promote a narrative. When they want to attack a group of people, when they want to go after conservatives, for instance, okay, The fake news, they attack with omission, they label, they mock. I mean, they're done to it's all done to dehumanize and to treat people with contempt, so they do not have to deal with the actual facts. So that's the way the fake news attacks people that want to attack their narrative. They do it by omission, they do it by labeling, mocking, and they're done to dehumanize. They're trying to dehumanize and treat people with contempt. That's because for the left, folks, for the left, all politics are personal. They make everything personal. Now, I want to trend a little bit because we had a recent interview with George Stephanopoulos, who, by the way, was a chief worker for the Hillary Clinton campaign. I remember a debate that George H.W. Bush had with Bill Clinton. I guess Ross Perot was there. But they were asking, it was a focus group. Oh, I should say it was one of those town hall debates, but it was a town hall where they were taking calls from all over the world. And I remember George Bush got a call from Brussels. He got a call from some other country or some obscure place in the country. And then George Stephanopoulos got through on a call. I'll never forget it. I remember looking at my wife saying, how the heck did this guy get a call in? He works for the Clintons. I mean, he's asking George Bush a question in a debate. Now, that was absolutely, I'll never forget it. I remember when I see George Stephanopoulos, I always think of that because they got his phone call in. And I remember Bush made a comment. He goes, gee, I got a call in from Brussels. I got a call in from somewhere. And then I got George Stephanopoulos in, and he works for the Clintons. How did he get a call in to me? And that was Welcome to Fake News, George H. Walker Bush. I mean, that's what that is. Welcome to Fake News. That was the introduction of CNN and all that nonsense. And that's how these people did it. I'm not kidding. I remember seeing it. Well, Stephanopoulos does an interview with Clinton, I should say, with Trump. And when Stephanopoulos is asking questions, it's sort of like Hillary asking questions because, remember, they're very good friends. And, you know, he knows that Trump knows that the Hillary campaign paid for the dossier. He knows they did it by hiring a law firm who hired an operation research firm, who hired a foreign intelligence person to come up with a dossier. That's called laundering, folks. That's laundering money or laundering. Okay. So Trump was being interviewed by Stephanopoulos, again, who worked for the campaign. So Hillary, I should say, he worked for Bill Clinton, which was he knows the Clintons real well. They're very good friends. So it may as well be Hillary asking the questions. I just thought it was interesting because Hillary was there in spirit. I mean, why don't we just say she was there in spirit? Because George Stephanopoulos was trying to get this. So, but what I thought was interesting was we know that they spied on Trump's campaign. And so Trump is forcing these people to go on the record with their opposition and their outrage to his response to Stephanopoulos. Everybody said, oh my goodness, what a faux pas Trump did. Because we know that Barr and Durham are conducting an operation to find out what kind of illegal activity was between Hillary campaign and Mueller investigators in Russia. We know that. And there's other foreign actors in order. They were all trying to sabotage Trump. That's what this is all about. So Trump is forcing all these people to go public with their outrage over his responding to a pseudo hypothetical discussion point. Okay. Saying it's, you know, by saying it's illegal, or it's but they're calling it illegal, unpresidential, un-American. That's what the fake news called it after the day after he did his interview. You know, the day's going to come where everybody's going to know what the Democrats did, folks. And that's just the bottom line. And so Trump was out there. And again, he makes his comment. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on all of that? And Annette, what are your thoughts on all of that? And what happened with all of that, with that interview?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's a ticking time bomb in a sense that, you know, there is so much. I kind of get this vision of a lot of people that are on the inside and know what's going on, that they're running around putting their fingers in a dike, you know, the little boy that tries to plug the stem and keep the dike from bursting. I think that's what's happening right now. And you're seeing, you know, all of these things that are coming out, and they will all be revealed. There's going to come a point. And I think that all of the media spin in the world is not going to convince everybody that we're all seeing this the wrong way. which is what they try to do.
let's help our listeners, because I wanted to bring up what was the question. Again, he's asking, you know, should a presidential candidate report to the FBI if he's approached by a representative of a foreign power? I want to make sure our listeners hear that. I omitted to talk about the question. I kind of alluded to some of the other stuff, so I wanted to bring that out. So that's what it was. He was asked, should a presidential candidate report to the FBI if he's approached or he or she's approached by a representative of a foreign power that they have dirt on political opposition? So, you know, he was asked, you know, should Don Jr. have gone to the FBI when he got the note about the Russians having dirt on Hillary? Well, folks, that's what this is all about. And Trump was not snared in a trap. He basically played these people because he knows nothing was said. He knows nothing was there. But he also knows he was spied on. So he wants to bring that highlight out. And I just wanted to, I'm sorry about that, Annette. I wanted to make sure we got that out. You know, and again, the other part of I just think he's trolling him. I just think he's trolling him. He's daring them to impeach him, okay? Because Operation Research, I mean, Hillary came right out and said it. I mean, you have, we were talking a little bit about Hillary's comments. What was Hillary talking about in that comment there a few years ago?
She was interviewed. Apparently, there was an interview that she appeared on The Daily Show. And a Washington Times reporter pointed out that Hillary Clinton said, hey, it's Oppo Research. It's all okay. If you have information that may or may not be useful, sure. You know, you should make sure that it's accurate and put it out into the public square. And I'm going, wait a minute. So the fact that you would use opposition research that was obtained through foreign sources, and it's okay for you to do it, but President Trump should be impeached because he said, well, you know, if somebody came to me with something, I'd listen to them, and then I decide whether or not it needed to be reported to the FBI. That's impeachable.
Well,
it's the double standard. It's the complete double standard that you see all the time.
Yeah.
With one side versus the other.
Well,
if a Democrat does it, it's perfectly okay. And Andrew McCabe even said, look, hey, it's opposition research. It's okay to do that because she paid for it. Now, if it's volunteered, then it's not okay.
Well, McCabe's comments, what was interesting was he mischaracterized. Okay. I mean, he's trying to say there's no equivalence between the deep state and what Trump did, because he mischaracterized what Trump said as an open invitation for foreign intelligence to steal information. Mm-hmm. See, to acquire. He said he was trying to acquire operation research. In any way and present, it's one thing. That's what he's basically saying. So he was trying to, for a political campaign, to hire a law firm. So what he says, he goes back into the idea. He says, but for a political campaign like Hillary to hire a law firm who then turns out and hires a research company who then contacts a foreign individual, he called him a foreign individual, we're going to call him a foreign agent, that is perfectly fine and legal, he says. See, he was trying to make a moral equivalency to justify what Hillary did. And I think that's very frightening. He was the number two in the FBI, folks. He was trying to do this. He was trying to draw this. He was mischaracterizing Trump. What he did was an open invitation for foreign intelligence to steal information, and comparing that to what Hillary did and her laundering of the of her efforts to keep her out of trouble. Look, the Obama administration not only wiretapped Trump, but the FISA process was absolutely abused. I mean, what happened to Hillary's missing 33,000 emails? I love the fact Trump brought that up when he spoke the other night. I just thought it was so funny. I mean, he got right into it. He says what she did was very expensive. She bleached 33,000 emails. And as he put it, he goes, if I had one love note between me and Melania and I decided to delete it, they would give me the electric chair. He said, you know, but it's true. I mean, where is the outrage? Anthony Weiner's laptop was corruptly used. And again, this was the biggest corrupt act, I think, against any political opponent. They just spied. They got caught. That's why these people have a complete avoidance of the facts. And I think that's very, and I'm glad to see your puppy agreed with what I just stated. That's excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, she doesn't like that foreign interference stuff and, you know, all the other double speak and, you know, it's okay for one and not the other. And, you know, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, the Democrats are screaming about, well, we can't have foreign interference in our elections. And yet they went out and basically bought foreign interference into our election. And as you mentioned, the information that was on the computers and the emails and the cell phones and all that stuff that they destroyed and, you know, bleach bit or acid washed their, you know, their hard drives and destroyed all of that information. Yeah, if any Republican, I mean, anybody had done that, you'd be in court, you'd be in jail. But because there's a double standard, again, I go back to the two tiers of justice in you know, the thinking of the Democrats and people that tend to lean in that direction.
That's right.
There's a two-tier justice system. It's what we want to do. And it really goes back to like Machiavelli, really, who said, you know, the ends justify the means.
That's right.
And Saul Alinsky talked the same thing, mm-hmm. that whatever you need to do, you can do as long as it gets you to the end game.
Which
and
is,
he even said in his book, if you need to kill somebody because that is the greater good, go ahead and do it.
Well, and what they, you know, it's amazing. And again, I just think, look, I think it's amazing how these Democrats are falling for this. I mean, now you have the party of Lenin Democrats that are out there now saying that if, well, Kamala Harris said, if I'm president, the Justice Department would prosecute Trump. So she's talking about weaponizing the Justice Department. Here we go again. They're looking to justify the Justice Department. I should say weaponize the Justice Department. That's what they're looking to do against anybody. Okay. I mean, what are we talking about, folks? We're talking about the deep state. And these people want to be the ones running it. This is the sham that the public has to realize. Presidents aren't supposed to be able to tell the Justice Department what to do. But Kamala Harris just recently said that she wants to tell them what to do. This is the double standard that your dog was barking to. She doesn't like that claptrap.
Yeah, no, she's a smart dog.
She's a smart dog. She doesn't like that claptrap nonsense.
She knows when, you know, when it's not okay for President Trump to give direction to the Justice Department, but it's okay for Kamala Harris,
yes,
if she were president, to, you know, or president to be able to say, okay, you're going to do this, this, and this for me, Justice Department. Yeah. They can make recommendations. They can say, hey, this needs to be looked into. But the idea of weaponizing the Justice Department, we saw that with the IRS and what happened with, you know, President Obama.
We just saw it with what happened to Donald Trump.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, we just went through it. I mean, like I said, I mean, Obama was in the meetings. We know this. We don't know how much of it came from him, but we haven't seen all these reports that came out. But one thing is for sure, folks, we just watched the Justice Department get weaponized against an American citizen. We just watched that happen. And again, happy no collusion, happy no obstruction to everybody. We have to end it right there. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in today at 4:30 to The Watchman, and also for tuning in tomorrow to The Watchman if you missed part of the show today. We air every weekend, every Saturday and Sunday at 4:30 right here on 1180 WFYL for a compelling discussion right here on The Watchman. So listen to us again listen to us again tomorrow. Thank you to our listeners. Thank you to Annette Baker for tuning in and helping us with this discussion. It was a very good discussion today. And we appreciate you tuning in. See you next week on The Watchman. I'm Clay Breese for Annette Baker. Goodbye for now.